This is the BBC.
Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is the writer Jackie Kay. Professor of Creative Writing at Newcastle and Chancellor of Salford University, this spring she also became Scotland's Macker, or Poet Laureate. If the page is another place to take difficult things, then it's no wonder she's so productive. Her life, from its very beginnings, has given her plenty to draw on. Brought up in a Glasgow suburb, in a home full of love and words and ideas, she nonetheless understood the notion of difference from a very young age. Her mum and dad are white. She isn't. For a time in her teenage years, she says she was simply an angry young black lesbian who lost her sense of humour. Lucky for all of us, she got it back. Much of the power in her work comes from writing about heavyweight subjects with a deft lightness of touch. She says poetry is important because it manages to say in words things you can't otherwise say. It manages to express people's love, people's grief, people's loss. Poetry gives voice to the voiceless. So, welcome, Jackie Kay. You talked there about love and grief and loss, and I wonder why it is you think that we as people turn to the words of strangers at the most difficult times in our life, the most vigorous times in our life.
I think when we have really difficult things happen to us, we are literally lost for words often, and we look for somebody else to have the words to put in for us, and as soon as we hear those words, we recognise them. They hold up a mirror to our experience, and we say, that's it, exactly. And we feel a kind of a gratitude, and we feel beyond that a kind of sense of that a writer knows us. We feel known by a poem because it expresses exactly how we feel, and sometimes how we feel is complex and difficult. And even in a very short poem, that kind of complexity of emotion can come across really, really strongly.
There are plenty of people who think poetry's not for them. They're like, you know, I don't get it. I don't get that stuff that these people love. What would you say to them?
I find a way of converting them. I've become all evangelical. I think there's lots of people that will come to a poetry reading and they'll come up to me and say, I've never been to a reading before and I didn't think I would like this. But they tell me they do. I remember being in Orkney one time and sitting next to this woman, and she said to me, do you think this is going to be any good? And I said, well, I hope so. And then I got up and was introduced to this woman, like, very fast. But afterwards, she said that she'd just come. And I love it if people would just come and just take a risk.
You said in your memoirs that some of your happiest memories are of people singing to you throughout your life. So it is a varied list. And is it a hard-won list? Did it take a lot of time to batter out into shape?
Oh, I found it agony, just because when you really, really love music, you actually feel that you're hurting some of the people that you love by not, which is, of course, nonsense, because this is your choice on a particular day, and perhaps another day your choice would be different.
So let's hear some of the ones that you have. Tell us about your first track. What disc are we going to hear?
Well, this is Bessie Smith singing Kitchen Man. My dad bought me my first ever double album was Bessie Smith, and I've just always loved that raw, unplugged, saucy voice. And Kitchen Man I used to listen to, and I didn't have a clue. I didn't have a clue the meanings. I just imagined a man that made her nice things to eat in the kitchen, wearing a big white hat. And then sort of years later, I understood what the double entendres of the song, so I love it for that.
Madam Books was quite beloved, servants by the score, footmen's at each door, butlers and maids galore. But one day Dan, her kitchen man, gave in his notice he's through. She cried, oh, Dan, don't go, it'll grieve me if you do. I love his cabbage gravy can't do without my kitchen man. While about his turnip top, like the way he warms my chop, I can't do without my kitchen man.
Quite the appetite. That was Bessie Smith singing Kitchen Man with Clarence Williams on piano and Eddie Lang on guitar. It was recorded in 1929. So, Jackie Kate, tell me about your parents.
Well, my parents are 91 and 85 now. They're really, really wonderful people. They're lively. They're a lot of fun to be with. I really enjoy their company. And my mum said to me recently, "I'm closer to you, Jackie, than if I'd given birth to you myself." And that's the way that I feel about them, that I almost feel like I was kind of meant to be with them. And they've both been politically engaged really all their lives. They were members of the Communist Party. My dad was the industrial organiser of the Communist Party. My mum was a primary school teacher. They were both locked up for protesting against Polaris.
Nuclear warheads submarines that they were bringing up the Clyde.
Right, at the Holy Loch, yes. And there was that song, "Och, och, get out the Holy Loch." So they've been sort of actively involved in the world and encouraged me to be all of their lives.
Your childhood was spent in Bishopbriggs, and a Bishopbriggs is this sort of respectable, fairly sedate, suburban place just on the outskirts of Glasgow. Your house, though, sounds anything but sedate and suburban. I mean, you had visitors from all over the world coming to see you and your parents.
We did. I mean, I'd often come down in the morning and there'd be somebody lying on the floor or lying on the couch and you'd sort of step over them and it would be, you know, somebody from Vietnam or from Nigeria or from Kenya or Uganda or from England. And there was a great atmosphere, often big sing-songs.
You have written about, I mean, heart-sinking but not surprising, sadly to say, the racism that you experienced from other kids in the playground. What is even more shocking, as I understand it, was you experienced racism from teachers in the classroom. Did you talk to your parents about that?
I talked to my parents one time when there was a particularly a teacher that actually called me a darkie, and they went right into the school, and my dad spoke to her. I was first conscious that I wasn't the same colour as my mum and dad when I was 7. I remember I was watching a cowboy and Indian film, and I was really shocked at the treatment of the Indians, and I realised that they were the same colour as me and that my mum wasn't. So I just said to her, "Why aren't you the same colour as me?" And she said, "Because you're adopted." And I said, "What does adopted mean?" And she said, "It means I'm no really your mummy." And that really distressed me, the idea that she wasn't really my mummy. I thought it meant that she wasn't real for a second, that something was going to happen to her. And I remember finding it profoundly upsetting at 7.
More to come, Jackie Kay. Tell me about your second disc. What's this?
This is my dad's party piece. He sang it all my life, throughout my life. "Brush up your Shakespeare, Cole Porter." I love the lyrics of this. It's just so much fun. It always makes me laugh. And it's really, there's a line that "Kick her right in the Coriolanus," that when my dad used to sing it years ago, he'd jump and do a flying kick. And now he just does a little movement with his walking stick. And it's quite amazing to think that the songs that you really, really love will grow and change with you.
"Brush up your Shakespeare, start quoting him now. Brush up your Shakespeare, and the women you will wow. With the wife of the British ambassador, try a crack out at Troilus and Cressida. If she says she won't buy it or take it, make her take it, what's more as you like it. If she says your behavior is heinous, kick her right in the Coriolanus. Brush up your Shakespeare, and they'll all bow, bow."
From the new Broadway cast recording of Cole Porter's Kiss Me, Kate, that was Lee Wilcoff and Michael Mulheron singing "Brush Up Your Shakespeare." Jackie Kay, is it true that even as a kid then, you were, I mean, that song is full of words and of course is about Shakespeare. You connected with words and the written word early, did you?
I did. I was a voracious reader as a kid and I absolutely loved reading. And I kind of loved the idea of finding a character that you felt was your soulmate, and reading from a really early age, she would find these kindred spirits. She would find characters or people or phrases that felt like they belonged to you, and you find a way of attaching themselves to you. So whether it was poetry or plays or novels, I just loved I loved reading.
And your first published poem was, you were 12, I think, and it was in the Morning Star, the communist newspaper. What was it about?
It was about poverty in Glasgow tenements. We lived in a tenement which was somewhat dreich. It was damp and dirty and much too small. And then it went on. But despite all these things, we managed to live and trusted in yin another. For love was the biggest factor of all, and it kept us all together.
Not a dry eye in the house at the end of that one.
My dad used to stand as a Communist Party candidate, and so I used to go around tenements with him.
Your first published collection of poetry was in 1991. It was called The Adoption Papers. It got a lot of attention. It won prizes. It was your story, but it was also their story too. What was your parents' reaction to having their lives written about and read about?
Well, I remember when I first told my dad I was writing The Adoption Papers, he said, "Have you not got a wee bit of a tip for yourself?" And he thought that the book might be a massive indulgence, which I worried about too. But then when it was published, a lot of people responded to it and people took it on as their story too. And then I think he could see that it was just everybody's story. I think that it's interesting, if you're adopted, you already come as a story. And the story is the thing that's handed down. You come with your story in a basket, really. And instead of passing down DNA, blood and biology, what is passed down are stories. And then you bond over the story.
Is it true that every birthday your mother would not just celebrate her daughter's birthday, but also talk about your birth mother to you on your birthday?
She would. She was.
What did she say?
My mum was so generous in that way. She'd say, "Somewhere, Jackie, there's a woman out there thinking that child I had will be 9 today. Somewhere, somebody's remembering your birthday."
Well, it's an extraordinary thing to do, because you're a mother too, I'm a mother. We feel probably ridiculously possessive about our children. And the idea that you open your child's heart to the possibility of this other parallel mother is a remarkable feat of warmth.
I agree. I think it's just so generous. I think my mum was just so generous. My mum used to imagine my birth father too, and she used to say, "I'm pictured in a Paul Robeson figure, Jackie, maybe with a bit of Nelson Mandela mixed in." So she actually encouraged me to imagine them, and so that meant that it was okay, and it meant that I didn't have to feel like an adulterer. I think that when you're adopted and you're very happy, and then you trace to your original family, you can feel a bit like you're betraying them or disloyal or like an adulterer.
Some more music, Jackie Kay. Your third. What are we going to hear?
This is Ella Fitzgerald and Count Basie, Honeysuckle Rose. I went to hear Ella when I was 14. It was my 14th birthday present.
Wow.
with my pal Gillian Innes, and it just blew my mind being able to hear her. I could have reached out and touched her, and I just absolutely loved her. And Gillian loved jazz in the same way as me, so whilst everybody else was listening to Donny Osmond and David Cassidy, Gillian and I were listening to Pearl Bailey and Ella Fitzgerald and Dinah Washington and Sarah Vaughan. And she used to come round, and my dad would clear the living room, and my dad and her would dance up and down. So I loved Ella's sort of zest for life.
Don't buy sugar, you just have to touch my cup. You're my sugar, 'cause sugar's so good, sweeter when you stir her. Every drops and the honey drips from your tasty lips, and I know the reason why. You're a much sweeter, goodness knows. You're my honeysuckle rose. Oh. Beep, beep, a doo-doo.
That was Ella Fitzgerald and Count Basie with Honeysuckle Rose. It was a serious accident, I think, when you were around about 17, a motorbike accident, that really began your writing in earnest. Was that to do with the fact that you just had to spend time on your own recuperating?
Exactly. I just laid up. I couldn't walk properly for a year and a half, and one leg is shorter than the other. So I went from being a runner and training 5 days a week, competing in the Scottish Schoolgirl Championships, to having this walking stick at 17, which made me feel very self-conscious, but it gave me a different way of seeing. And I think sometimes things that happen to you that make you empathetic, I suppose, to see yourself in other people's shoes is a good thing.
Tell me about this, and I should tell listeners that I'm quoting directly here. Tell me more about this angry young black lesbian who lost her sense of humour. Those are, I should stress, your words and not mine.
Yeah, I remember I went to university and then I became very feminist. I joined this consciousness-raising women's group called the Women's Collective. And then I would come home and I'd be furious at adverts and furious at people saying, doll, you all right, doll? I'd say, I'm not your doll. And then I suddenly realised that I was black properly. I hadn't realised before I went to university properly. And so I'd be kind of... I think, goodness, how didn't I properly know about this? It was like I only knew about it in a negative way and being called names, but I didn't know about it in a conscious political way. So that became part of my identity. And then I remember meeting the African-American poet Audre Lorde, and she said, Jackie, you don't have to choose. You can be black and Scottish. And the and was a very long and. And I thought, oh, that's great. And that really changed things for me. It kind of gave me back my sense of humour, meeting Audre Lorde.
You met her in your early 20s,
yes,
around
I
about
did,
22.
Yeah.
As a student, you were a student at Stirling University in the early 80s. I've read that you were subjected to this really extraordinary... It was homophobic, it was racist, it was a poster campaign targeted particularly at you, with you named on the posters. You're a professor now, you're a chancellor at a university. You know, we hear a lot of discussion, indeed our Prime Minister herself has involved herself in the discussion about safe spaces in university campuses stifling free speech, and that people have the right to say what they think and to offend. Where are you on that?
I really, really believe in freedom of speech, and I find it very worrying what's happening in universities. I came from a particular time in the 70s where political debate, even if people were completely against you, was very, very important. I think when things are violent and aggressive, I mean, these posters were violent. They put razors behind them so as if anybody ripped them down, they would get their fingers shredded. And that was pretty... distressing, and that was very, very far right. You know, that was kind of British movement, BNP, that kind of fascism. I fear that we might return to that. It feels like we're returning to a period of time where things have become very charged.
Time for some music, Jackie Kay. Tell me about your fourth.
My fourth track is Nina Simone, Mississippi Goddamn. It's a protest song. She wrote it herself, outraged at the death of the schoolgirls in the church in Alabama. There's something about protest songs themselves that I love too. I used to be in the Socialist Sunday School Choir and we used to sing songs like, if I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, and down by the riverside, I'm going to lay down my sword and shield. I love the idea that people collect together about something they feel strongly about and make a song about it.
Hound dogs on my trail, school children sitting in jail, black cat cross my path, I think every day's gonna be my last. Lord have mercy on this land of mine, we all gonna get it in due time. I don't belong here, I don't belong there, I've even stopped believing in prayer. Don't tell me, I'll tell you, me and my people just about do. I've been there, so I know. Keep on saying, go slow. Well, that's just the trouble. Washing the windows, picking the cotton, you're just plain rotten.
That was Nina Simone and Mississippi Goddam. You said during that, Jackie Kay, that again, she was one of the people that you went to see. You saw her live in concert. Where was that?
I went to see her at Ronnie Scott's. It was fantastic. You know, she was wearing a white, long white fur coat. She was led onto the stage and she asked people to shout out requests. And I shouted out, "Sing Sugar in My Bowl." And she looked straight at me and she pointed and she said, "Sugar in my bowl, I'll be doing later." And I nearly passed out. Nina Simone talked to me.
Let's talk for a moment about your son, Matthew. He's 28 now, and his father is your good friend, fellow poet, and also academic, Fred Degas. Did he offer to father a child for you? That's what I read.
Yes, he did. He saw me one day, and we were in a cafe, and he could see me sort of looking broodily at these kids, and he said, "Do you want to be a mother? Because I'd be happy to be the dad." So that was fantastic. And Matthew is miraculous to me to have him in my life.
Did you live as a... Were you a single mother when you were looking after Matthew when he was small?
No, I wasn't a single mum. He grew up initially with my partner at the time, Louise, and he was very close to her, still is very, very close to her. And Fred was involved in his way. So I didn't ever feel completely alone. And then after that, we lived with Carol Ann, and she had a daughter too, and became a family together. I think what was unusual at the time was that there weren't that many lesbian mums. I remember saying to him one time, "It's quite cool, you know, having a lesbian mum." This is when he was about 16, and he said, "No," he said, "it's not cool at all. It'd be cool to have a lesbian gran." He's always come out with things that I wasn't expecting. I remember when he was three, I thought, "Oh, he's not got a man in his life properly all the time." And so my dad was down and I said, "Go and watch Grandpa shave." So he went up and I said, "Did you watch Grandpa shave?" And he said, "Yes, but he didn't do it properly. He only went like this," and he kind of motioned under his chin. He said, "He didn't do his legs." And I told this to my dad, and my dad said, "You need to be careful. You're not bringing up that boy in too esoteric a household." And so I guess I was thinking the esoteric household would be a great title for something.
And it was just a few days before his birth, before your son's birth, that you made proper contact with your birth mother. Is that right? Did you get a letter?
That's absolutely right. You know, when you are pregnant, you just become really curious about the person who carried you.
Let's have some more music, Jackie Kay. It's time for your fifth. Tell me about this.
This is Ali Farkaturi, "Hey Gana." I just love this. If I was on my desert island, it would lift my heart and I'd be singing along with it. I just play him all of the time. And I often am found dancing around my kitchen to him with my partner, Denise.
Ali Farkaturi and "Hey Gana." It was 3 years later then, Jackie Kay, that you did. We were talking just a moment ago about this letter that came a few days before you gave birth from your mother, replying to your inquiry about her giving you up for adoption. 3 years later that you met face to face, and it sounds in anything that I've read like an awkward first encounter. Is that fair?
Yes, it was. It was tricky. One strange thing was that I'd bought her a bunch of orchids and she'd bought me a bunch of orchids. So that was a strange coincidence. But she was very nervous.
What did you ask her?
I didn't really get a chance to ask her the things that I wanted to ask her because she was so nervous and she was just talking all the time about her neighbours and this, and it just seemed an intrusion. It seemed rude almost to ask her too many things. So I didn't really get a chance. I asked her a bit about my father though, but she didn't really remember too much about him.
And then you did meet your father. You've written about it, most famously in your memoir, Red Dust Road. You open the book with this, well, I'm going to call it tragicomic encounter, because bits of it do make one laugh out loud and bits of it make one almost cry. How would you describe it?
Yes, I think that's pretty close to the mark, Kirsty. I think I only saw the comedy in that meeting afterwards. So when I was actually in the moment, I didn't find it funny at all because my birth father, the first and only meeting with him was he sort of sang and danced and clapped around me. Saying, "We welcome Jackie Kay to Nigeria. Thank you, God Almighty, for bringing her here safely. Oh, God Almighty!" And he sang and he danced around the room and he clapped. And that went on for 2.5 hours. And he said the most amazing things. But at one point in the middle of this, I realised that he saw me as his past sin and that I needed to be cleansed. And so that was then became quite disturbing. And he didn't want to tell any of his family about me. He said, "If people were to know about you, they would lose their faith in God." And I thought, goodness, I didn't realise I was that powerful. But I was really, really happy that I met him. But also I realised that my father was a stranger, a complete stranger, a relative stranger. And I felt all churned up by it. But at the end of the day, I felt not properly known and that I didn't properly know him either.
And how did you settle with yourself those feelings of being all churned up? Where did they go?
Into writing, I think. I think you know, you're lucky if you can write, if you can find some way of crafting an experience, because you can't just splurge onto the page. You have to actually construct and structure the experience so as it will let other people in, so as people can open the door and walk into your experience and then call it theirs. And in that business of doing that, that in itself gives you somewhere to go with it, and it means that you then kind of can, it's almost like telling a story back to yourself. Often the more traumatized by something we are as people, the more we'll tell the story, or else we'll be completely silent and not be able to talk at all. But I think that writing is one of the ways of expressing the inexpressible, of giving voice to things that are difficult.
Your birth mother died earlier this year. Was there a sense of anything when that happened? And indeed, did you go to her funeral? Did you feel the need to mark that moment?
I did go to her funeral, yes. I read a poem at her funeral. I wasn't introduced as her daughter, so people didn't know that I was her daughter. I was just put down as friend of the family. So I found that quite difficult, and I found the whole thing upsetting. And I found that I didn't really quite know what to do about at the funeral, whether to, you know, had these fantasies that I would just get up and say, "I'm her daughter," you know, like, and then I thought, no, I'll just upset everybody if I do that. So I just read the poem for her.
Let's have some more music, Jackie Kay. We're going to listen to your sixth piece this morning. Tell me about this, Joyce.
This is Chopin. I really love the way that the cello and the piano talk to each other. I was really lucky in that one of my ex-lovers was a viola player, and she introduced me to all sorts of pieces of music that I wouldn't have otherwise had.
Chopin's Cello Sonata in G Minor with Marta Argerich on piano and Mstislav Rostropovich on cello. Jackie Kay, by my reckoning, I think you've won about 21 separate awards. Trumpet won the Guardian Fiction Prize. You got an MBE, you got Saltire, the Somerset Maugham Award for poetry. The life of a poet is surely a pretty sort of financially precarious one. Wouldn't you rather just have had a very nice regular income as a writer rather than sort of having to find space in the house for all these various gongs and awards?
Well, I don't really have them in the house, the gongs and the awards. But I I think, you know, awards are really wonderful because they say to you that this book has meant something. But I think the thing that really matters is the writing. And it feels like a huge privilege to be a poet. My son used to say to me when he was very wee, "Mum, why are you always going to poetry?" And he thought poetry was a place. You got on a train or a plane or a bus and you got off at this place called poetry.
If only.
It's kind of like that in some ways, some of the places you go to.
Tell me about your next piece of music, Jackie Kay. It's your seventh.
Well, Ray Charles, I absolutely love. Hit the Road Jack. All my friends call me Jack. I like just being on the road, travelling, and I do an awful lot of that, being a peripatetic poet. Also, it came on the radio in Nigeria when I was travelling to try and find my birth father's ancestral village. And it makes me think about my son, because we play Ray Charles all the time, and that thing of having kids and trying to pass on to them some of your musical enthusiasms. And he loves Ray Charles. And I remember we went to settle him in to university and we played Ray Charles all the way down the motorway, Matthew and I in the car with all his stuff. And then on the way back, I played Ray Charles again all the way up and the rain was going. I was just in floods of tears.
Hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack.
That was Ray Charles and Hit the Road, Jack. Jackie Kay, Jack Kay, as your friends call you. You grew up then, of course, listening to poetry at Burns Nights, at Pint and Poetry Nights in Sucky Hall Street. You went to those. You once said, "We write to understand the things that are missing in our lives." You've got a son, you've got at least three jobs, you've got a long-term partner. What is still missing? What keeps you writing?
God, that's such a brilliant question. I think, you know, we're often, I have so much in my life, and I feel very loved. And I think that love is the thing that defines us more than anything else. Love is what gives us our identity, and love is what makes us strong. But I think we also are often shadowed in our life by losses. We'll have lost people in different ways. And so I think that kind of strange loss becomes actually a presence. Absence becomes a presence in our life. And I think often writers write to try and grapple with the presence that absence makes.
Your life is so much dominated by words. Alone on the islands. How do you think you would be?
Oh my goodness. I think the funny thing about writers is that we have to be loners in lots of ways. I like being alone. I don't ever feel lonely, but I'm very, very sociable. So I would have to make company of what was there. I'd have to make imaginary friends, trees, vegetation, plants. I'd have to have wee conversations with them. I think it would drive me a little bit mad. Yeah, I would be scatting. I'd be singing Mississippi Goddamn, and I'd be roaring at the shore and at the sea waves, and probably turn into just an exaggerated version of what I am already.
It's time for your final disc, Jackie Kay. Tell us about this, your eighth.
Well, this is Jean Redpath singing the Burns song, Green Grow the Rushes O. I think she's just got one of the most amazing voices. And this makes me think about all the Burns suppers that I used to attend as a kid in Partickborough Lesser Hall. I used to go to these Burns suppers. My dad would do the Immortal Memory. Maisie Hill or somebody like that would address the haggis. And it was all fantastically dramatic. And I realised that there could be great drama in poetry and in song.
There's nought but care on every hand, in every hour that passes o'er. Oh, it signifies the life o' man, and twere not for the lasses o'er. Green grow the rushes o'er, green grow the rushes o'er, the sweetest hours that e'er I spend or spend among the lasses all.
That was Jean Redpath singing Robbie Burns' song Green Grow the Rashes. Oh, both of us rather dabbing the corners of our moist eyes there, I think, Jackie Kay. I'm going to give you the books now. The Bible, the complete works of Shakespeare, and of course you get to take along another book to this lonely island. What will your book be?
I have to take my old copy of the complete works of Burns, because Burns would make me laugh, would make me cry, would remind me of some of my favourite songs, and it would remind me of all the different Burns suppers and the times that I've had with my mum and dad, and all the different glinting knives addressing the haggis. It would be great company for me.
That's your book then. Of course you get a luxury too. What will your luxury be?
Well, my luxury would have to be a wee self-filling hip flask of a good malt.
Nice.
An Islay malt, peppery, nippy. And the wee hip flask would just keep filling it and be very hip. For the one time I'd get to be cool.
What about one disc? If you had to save one of these from the waves, which disc would it be?
I'd have to take Chopin with me. I'd have to take a piece of music that kept on changing and shifting and changing with the weather in the desert island and changing with my mood, and I think that piece would probably do it for me.
Jackie Kay, thank you very much for letting us hear your desert island discs.
It's been a huge pleasure, Kirsty. Thank you.
You've been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.